Welcome to Permission to Heal. I am Marcy Brockman, and I am so glad you're here. In this podcast, we engage in meaningful, deeply human conversations, using our voices to inspire connection, compassion, understanding, empathy, and wholehearted wellness. I want you to find the courage to transform yourself no matter what others tell you. Only you can give yourself permission to trust yourself, permission to take care of yourself, permission to follow your heart and desires, and build a life of love, home, and belonging. Through sharing our stories, we will help each other to heal and create the healthy, meaningful lives we richly deserve. We only need our own permission to begin. Hi, listeners. This is Marcy Brockman, and this is Permission to Heal. I'm thrilled that you're here. In today's episode, we will be talking with Danielle Laura from Tampa, Florida. Danielle is a former certified trauma counselor, a certified Reiki master, and a transformation catalyst. She's a two-time number one best-selling award-winning author, advisor, energy and relationship expert, and the founder of the HOT Method. She founded several companies that improve the way we heal and learn. In her private work, she guides thought leaders, celebrities, and power couples around the globe in igniting their innate gifting so they can master their mission, amplify their impact, and experience deep connection and fulfillment. A recognized authority on relationships, alternative healing, and self-mastery, Danielle has been featured in over 30 international publications and podcasts, including Bustle, Upjourney, Thrive Global, Elephant Journal, and more. In her personal work, she guides conscious thought leaders, celebrities, and power couples in mastering the connection between their energy, spiritual gifting, and relationships in order to have the sovereign success and deep fulfillment they truly desire. Her book, Dear Love, I'm Ready for You, speaks about the journey of overcoming heartbreak and the return to your own soul, becoming deeply in love with the aspects that make you, you. In her other book, Unleashing Her Wild, is all about freeing feminine intuition and instinct as guides to an awakened life. This conversation that I had with Danielle was really fun and really deep and introspective and illuminating and inspiring. We both very quickly clicked and felt like we were chatting with our own best friends. It was really moving and uplifting. And I hope, I know that all of you out there listening will find it the same as well, that you will listen and gobble up every bit of her brilliance and sweetness and positivity. So listen in. We're about to begin. Welcome to Permission to Heal. I am Marcy Brockman, and I am thrilled that you're here. Danielle Laura is with us today. How are you, Danielle?
I am wonderful, Marcy. Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
I am so thrilled to be here. You're in sunny Tampa, Florida, all nice and warm. Got a nice glow to your skin. You all listeners can't see her beautiful face, but she's just glowing from the sun, and I'm freezing here in New York, but we're okay. It's fine. So I'm so excited to have you here. We're like, you know, deep into the middle of the first season of the podcast. I'm having such a thrill talking to all of you wellness professionals and learning stuff from you and sharing all of your wisdom with the listeners. It's totally awesome. So we're just going to dive right into the six quick questions and then we'll take it from there.
Perfect.
You're ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So what five words would you use to describe yourself?
I would say intuitive, deep, dynamic, loyal, loving.
Wow. I love dynamic. Such a dynamic word. Sorry to say that, but we use it in literature classes because I'm an English teacher. So we talk about a dynamic character as a character who undergoes change within the process of the story or whatever it is. And so I always think like people who embrace change and are flexible and, you know, it's just such a great word.
Thank you. I love it too.
Number two, what is your favorite way to spend a day?
I love connecting with people, like loved ones, friends, whatever we can do. It doesn't even matter what it is that we're doing, as long as just I get to be with amazing people that I love connecting. We could be playing games or just sitting around a bonfire talking, but just that deep level of connection, having that expression where you can just be like totally you with that person and just have the best time.
I love that too. And like a really small, intimate group.
Yes.
To me, like I get that sort of feeling after a party or after a holiday celebration when most of the guests have gone home and you're just left with like a few people and everyone's relaxed because all the hubbub of the activity or the party or the holiday or whatever is over. People are full. They've had a few drinks, you know, whatever. And it's that like intimacy. It's later. People are tired. Their guard is down so that they're more warm and fuzzy, you know.
You can get deeper.
I love that. I hate big parties because nobody can talk about anything real and it's too superficial. I like smaller groups, you know. What is your favorite childhood memory?
The first thing that comes to my mind is I was probably like 5 or 6 and it was at Christmas time. I've come from a huge family. So we have always like the whole family gathers at Christmas. There's like 60 plus people there. And I remember like a few of my cousins and I stay at my aunt's house on Christmas Eve. And then Christmas Day is a huge celebration. And I remember we woke up that morning and I was like, I want to see Santa. And I was like, so determined. It was all I was talking about. And then Santa, little did I know, is my uncle, dressed up Santa, came through. He comes like walking up the driveway that night at the party and knocks on the front door and comes in. And he sits down on the couch and me and all of my little cousins at the time went over and were able to like sit on his lap and like ask for what we wanted and all of these things. And it just seemed so magical to me. And I think like that magical moment of like anything can happen.
Yeah.
I think I like kind of brought that into my life. And I think like I've always had that spirit of miracles can happen. Anything can happen. So I think
at any moment.
Yeah. So that was just the first thing that came to my mind.
That's awesome. That's very cool. Like I had this sort of weird, I shouldn't say this on air, but I had this weird sort of elitist thing about Santa. I don't even know if that's the right word I'm using, but I, you know, was one of the only Jewish kids that I knew growing up. And so my parents told me that Santa was just the kids' parents. You know, if your kids are listening with your children, they're under 8. I'm really sorry. I'm ruining it right now. But I was told not to tell them that Santa was their parents. And so I felt like I was in on the grown-up secret and like, like super special and mature or something, even though I was the same 6 or 7 years old that they were. They would talk about Santa and I'd be like,
you knew the real goods. That's so funny.
It's funny as hell. Okay. What is your favorite meal?
You know, I'm Italian, so anything pasta. I would have to say penne pasta with shrimp and like a lemon garlic butter sauce. Oh, it's over.
Sounds fabulous.
Yes.
Of all of the guests, the few guests, but all of the guests that I have interviewed and I've asked this question, without actually doing statistical analysis, I would say about 75% have put shrimp or seafood in their favorite meal.
Interesting.
It's very interesting to me.
Huh.
I don't know what that says sociologically at all, but you know, interesting.
We can do research, figure out what it means.
Yeah, we could. We could. Number 5, what one piece of advice would you like to give your younger self?
Ooh, I would tell her to just trust herself, trust her spirit, you know, trust the nudges that come through, even when things make no logical sense, even when nobody understands, trust anyway, leap anyway, because it's always better than you could have imagined if you would have just planned out every little thing.
Amen. Absolutely. And most of the guests say that as their answer, some variation of that we wish that at a younger age, we would have learned to trust the whispers of our own hearts more than we did. I think I would like to figure out why the majority of us seem to grow up with this sense that we don't trust ourselves, that somehow we're listening more to the external things than the internal things and discounting our internal needs.
Yeah, absolutely.
To our own detriment, you know?
Absolutely. It's so amazing that well, I wish we could learn that sooner, right? But it's amazing that we can see that in hindsight. And we can see, I think once you kind of hit like your 30s, I think you're like, oh, okay, I've kind of figured myself out. I'm going to learn to trust myself now. And the whole world, you know, I don't need to revolve around the whole world type of thing, right? And I think you kind of come into your own at a certain point. But it's good to at least look back and say, okay, I know I can trust myself because this is where I've been and I know this is where I'm going to go.
Do you think it comes from self-knowledge and self-awareness, or do you think there's something our parents can do or that parents can do that will help that or support that or foster that? Or do you think it's just by nature of being a certain age and getting some maturity and some experience under your belt?
I do think the older we get, the more self-aware we become, but I do think we can teach that from a young age. And I think that we can actually teach, I'm a firm believer in this, in teaching intuition to kids and understanding like, what is your dominant intuition type? How do you know when your intuition is speaking to you? How do you harness that and listen to it? And I think if we taught kids that now, we would have a totally different world in years to come.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think there are so many people, regardless of age, that for some reason that I can't explain, they are reluctant to get to know themselves or reluctant to do the work entailed in getting to know themselves.
And yeah.
I'm floored by that. I don't understand. Do you find that as well, or is that just my experience?
And I think it's because when we go into self-discovery, it can be messy. There's a lot of emotions that come up that sometimes we don't want to face and we don't have to deal with. It's hard sometimes, like emotionally draining. So I think a lot of people want to know themselves and they begin the process and then they're like, oh no, this is too much. Absolutely not, right?
Right, it's too hard.
And so they just stop. And I think that's where it ends. And then they never want to go back because they don't want to feel that level of pain again, so to speak. But it's like, that's just the beginning. When we just get just right through that, that's when everything changes. So I think it's a matter of just staying with it, you know, and just pushing through. The quickest way to the light is just straight through the darkness. We have to sometimes feel those things, face those things so we can just come right out of it.
Absolutely. The only way out is through.
Yeah.
I have that tattooed on my arm.
I love that.
You know, I think so many of us, and I've said this before on the podcast, those of you listeners who have heard this before, that so many people avoid the painful recognition and the painful experience, even learning how to process it and get past it. They can't, and they sort of shove it in the corner of their bedroom and throw it under the laundry. Yep. But it's gonna come out of the corner and rear its head through our psychological behavior or through our health. There's going to be some way that's going to bug us. It's not going to just sit there quietly in the corner.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
It always comes back to bite you in the ass. So you might as well embrace it and get it over with, you know, just muscle through it, lean into the pain and the vulnerability and just feel it and learn from it and then put it away and move on.
Absolutely.
Okay. That's question six.
Let's go.
Let's go. What one thing that you would most like to change about the world?
I wish that we could cultivate the energy of living in love instead of fear. And what I mean by that is, you know, we're so conditioned to kind of believe that if somebody doesn't believe the exact same thing as us, that we're doomed, right? Or that they're wrong. And it's so like, you know, one against the other type of energy, right? Rather than what if we could all just be fully expressed, have disagreements, and it'd be totally okay. What if we could still love one another through that, right? And I think that, of course, the last few years has demonstrated how much room for opportunity we have for that in the world. And so creating that energy of love over fear, I think could be so powerful.
I agree. It's painful to see how divisive our country has become, or maybe always was secretly, I don't know, where they've given permission over the last few years to express things that they had kept closer to the vest before, or has this exacerbated things that may or may not have been passed down by their parents or their neighbors or families, or I don't know, but the intolerance has to go away.
Yeah. Completely agree.
I've got students who are already, you know, they're high school juniors or seniors who are already so firmly entrenched in their particular point of view that they are unwilling to even tolerate a differing point of view without insulting it or belittling it or the person who is espousing this different point of view. And they're still teenagers. It makes me so sad that even in the process of education, I can't shed light on something that runs contrary or adjacent to what they're feeling or thinking.
And do you think that's a part of their conditioning and the way they were raised? Or do you think that's part of kind of the culture of that era right now of teenagers that are living at this day and age?
I think it's more of a community family thing. Because I don't see it really widespread as much as just in small pockets of things, like small pockets of friend groups that friend group itself may be the community that shares that idea or that behavior, or maybe it's inherited from their parents or their families. I'm not really sure. And nor do I want to put myself into the position of actually asking.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel bad for them because they're not allowing themselves to just hear someone else. I'm not saying you have to adopt their point of view. I'm not saying you have to agree with them. I'm not saying any of that. You know, I would fight to the death somebody's opinion to express somebody's right to express their opinion, even if it ran 100% contrary to mine. And I think that that's not as common a belief or value as I would have hoped it would be, or that I perceive that it used to be. Again, my perception, it might not be true at all.
Right. I think that what that comes down to is emotional intelligence. And I wonder if we could teach emotional intelligence in school, like as an actual class that kids get credit for, right? Yeah. Of how to be able to listen and actually hear what someone is saying and respond accordingly from an emotionally regulated place, right? And genuinely care and have concern for those of others, like having the empathy to want to know what someone else thinks, even if it's different from you. Right. I think this is something that should be normalized in schools.
I agree. And it's something that I and many of my colleagues as English teachers try to do through the literature. Right. I think I've actually read a few psychological studies, or maybe not studies, but articles that make a very good case for the study and analysis of fiction specifically as a way of teaching emotional literacy. As you talk about characters and what they've gone through and motivations and problems and, you know, all that sort of stuff, you can start to see what it's like to be in somebody else's shoes and have empathy for them and the situations that they find themselves in. And I think that sharing stories, fiction or nonfiction, whether their own, our own personal narratives or sharing novels that someone else wrote, I think that's where empathy is born.
I agree, because we do learn through stories. We do learn through seeing something in someone else apart from ourselves. We can't always, not everybody has the natural ability to be self-aware, to be self-effacing, right? But if you can read a story where you're seeing someone else exhibit X, Y, Z, you can relate to that. And so I love that you're using that through literature to teach your students about emotional intelligence. That's huge.
Yeah. I think it's the greatest joy of my professional life in that respect, because I mean they're paying me to read books and talk about feelings and life with my students, you know. And I could teach something for the 20th year in a row, and every time I do it, I learn something new because the kids read it a different way, you know. Everybody reads it a different way, so very cool. So you call yourself a transformation catalyst. I want to know what that is. What is that?
So that was birthed.
It's a fabulous phrase, by the way.
Thank you. So I didn't even come up with that. I can't even take credit for that name. A client was calling me, that one of my longer term clients that I worked with for a period of, for over a year, almost 2 years actually, where literally her entire life transformed during our period of work together, every domain of her life. Her
That's fabulous.
Business, relationships, her health, spirituality, like everything from the inside out. And I was noticing this with a lot of my clients. And I think the whole reason for that is because I go so deep. And I use my HOT method, which stands for honest, open, and transparent.
That was my next question.
Perfect. You know, to really get to the core of someone and like, what really is the truth here? And I think so many times in life, we don't have the person that we can really be emotionally raw with and emotionally nude with, so to speak. Mm-hmm. We don't feel safe. We're not blessed enough sometimes to have someone to just share our heart with, to share secrets maybe we've never shared before. But it's through those shadows. It's going into the depth of those things that we've kept hidden and exposing them to light and healing through them and processing through them in a healthy way. That's what creates the transformation of our mindset, of our energy, to actually know that we're worthy of having, doing, or being what it is we truly desire. And then taking the steps to actually do it. There's a lot energetically we've got to kind of push, break out of the way, right? So that we can do and be these people that sometimes we don't ever feel safe enough to do that. And that's the biggest catalyst. You have to feel safe.
Absolutely.
And so creating that level of safety for transformation to happen, that is the biggest blessing to me. I couldn't imagine doing anything else at this point in my life, right? That is something that is inherently a gift for me that comes so naturally. And that's what I love helping other people to find as well for them. Like, what is your greatest gift? What is the thing that happens so naturally for you? And let's bring that out and let's explore it and let's master it so you can master your mission. And so that's what I'm super passionate about.
So how do you do that with people? How do you take a person who is struggling in various domains of their life and recognize that?
A huge part of it. So we do a lot of mindset work, but that really the catalyst that I see is the energy work. So I'll go into deep levels of energy work with people. My background, by the way, is in counseling. It's a trauma certified and everything as well, which I think is extremely important.
Yeah.
You're going to be doing transformation work with people. And we go into, there's a lot of like guided meditations and things that we do to get into the psyche, because a lot of times we are completely clogged up in our minds and we don't even know what the problem, we don't even know what the problem is, or we'd fix it. Right. And so people come to me, extremely high achieving, intelligent people who are so successful in all of these areas of their life. Yet there are these things that they can't break through because they just can't access it. And I used to be one of those people as well several years ago. So I get it. I lived that journey too. So it's coming out of the head and coming back into the heart and back into the body and allowing ourselves to really feel again. Mm-hmm. I found that a lot of times we're going through the motions of life, but we're not really feeling. And so as a result, we're feeling disconnected from ourselves, from our relationships. Yeah. And we're just kind of, we may have everything that it looks like on the outside, but on the inside, we're not really fulfilled. We're not really happy. And so it's going to the root of what is stopping that or causing that, pulling out the root and essentially planting a whole new garden so that we can have what we really desire.
It absolutely makes sense to me. You know, there are periods of my life where I was probably the most upset and disconnected and sad and lonely. And rather than acknowledge that, because all of those emotions are so painful and figuring out how to fix them can be so overwhelming, that I completely disconnected from my physical body, which sounds weird, but I like lived completely in my head and not in my body. Yep. And obviously, you know, I'm touching things and moving around and I'm still physically in my body. It's not like a sci-fi film. Yeah. And I was still able to give love and warmth and deep connection with my kids, but everything else kind of disconnected. And my friendships sort of fell away. My marriage was not good, which was a significant portion of my loneliness and distraughtness, but that's not really a word. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it took a lot to pull me back into my body again which was necessary to deal with what was causing me to be so upset, and then eventually to figure out how to fix it and then to heal from it. So none of that could happen until I could figure out how to feel like I was in my body again.
Exactly. Exactly. I love that you experienced that firsthand and get what I just said. You know, some people, it's hard for people to understand right off the bat. And then some people are like, oh my God, yes, that's exactly what I need, because I know I'm too in my head. So it just depends on the person. And really that's the key, is meeting the person where they're at and being able to create that custom tailored experience for them. Because it's not a one size fits all box. We can't just say, oh, this is the way we're going to do it, and this is what's going to work for you, because it doesn't. So being able to create that space and be emotionally intelligent enough too in what you're doing to be able to see and determine what someone needs. And maybe what you just did with your last client is not going to work with this client, and so on and so forth. And seeing them as they are and meeting them where their needs are and taking yourself out of it, because it's not about like me, you know, as their advisor or counselor or therapist or whatever. It's not about what I think is going to work for them. It's about what I see they're going to need the most. And I think that that's the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I, for me, I've always just intuitively or naturally turned to writing as my own solace. Yeah. And, even as a teenager, I started keeping journals in 1983 and I didn't realize what I was doing for myself by doing that, but it was just such a gift. I want to like go back in time and thank that younger version of Marcy, because it was totally my salvation. But now I just forgot what I was going to say. The brain is just so crazy. You reach a certain age and then suddenly thoughts just disappear. Nouns disappear. I was having a conversation with somebody about making a salad, and I couldn't think of the word cucumber. And I'm like, you know, that long green tubular kind of vegetable, you know, like I could describe everything about it, but I couldn't remember the word cucumber. Really? Should I worry about that? You know, do I need a neurologist?
I think we're just too clogged up. We got too many things to worry about. We can't remember it.
Too many tabs open on the browser of my brain, you know? It's crazy. It's crazy. Okay. So if you say you guide those who are experts at what they do to become, what did I write here? I guide those who are experts at what they do to become experts at who they are, so they can avoid burnout and create expansive forms of love. Can you go into that a little bit?
Yeah.
I kind of messed that up, but it's attached to your HOT method. Yeah. I read it and you're on your website, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of the people that come to work with me are extremely successful. They're experts in their field, in whatever their field is, typically service-based people, whether they're doctors or service-based business owners, things of that nature. They're in the healing profession, so to speak. And they are phenomenal at what they do. They've had a lot of success in their life. However, they're not feeling that level of fulfillment inside. And they're wondering, what's wrong with me? I should be happy. I have everything that I could want, everything I've always wanted, everything I've worked so hard for. And yet, why do I feel kind of empty? Mm-hmm. Why do I feel like something's missing? Right. And so when the shift here is becoming an expert at who you are, because there's typically something that's out of alignment. So when we go into who you are and the mastery, it's really self-mastery, we really uncover three main things. One is your energetic blueprint. So how you thrive in your ultimate energy so that you can actually use your energy for potency in this world. So many times we're in resistance. We're doing all the things we think we should do, but we're not actually in flow with the way our energy.
I hate that word should.
Exactly.
I just can't stand should.
Yes. The other thing is intuition and spiritual gifting. I believe we are all intuitive beings. We just have to uncover how our intuition is speaking to us so that we can learn how to unshakably trust ourselves.
Right.
That creates mastery of ourselves. And then the third thing is relationship to ourself and to others. Typically, the people that I work with have not put themselves first, maybe ever, in their life.
Right.
And so the relationship to themselves is really lacking. They don't even know what they want. When I ask, usually they're like, I've literally never thought of that. You know, they've literally never asked themselves what they truly want. They've kind of been living life by default of what they think they should do to be successful or happy or blah, blah, blah. But it just hasn't been working because they're not being true to themselves. And that's why we have to get hot, which stands for honest, open, and transparent. And let's pull back the layers of the shoulds and woulds and what your mom and dad wanted you to do or what your spouse wants you to do or what you think your kids want of you. And let's just get to the real core. Let's take everything away. Let's take the title away. Let's take experience away and let's just be a girl or let's just be a boy, right? If you didn't have everything else, you didn't even know your own name, what would you do? What would you want to do? And this is a process sometimes, right? They don't know right away. It's nearly impossible. Hardly ever do they know right away because they've literally never given themselves the space to understand that. So the whole essence is mastering themselves so they can then master their mission and do what they really meant to do that not just brings outer success, but also inner fulfillment, which is really the key and the connection that they truly desire, but maybe have lacked previously.
Makes total sense to me. And I when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do career-wise, I had like a very specific notion of myself in a business suit and a briefcase walking in Manhattan to an office, yeah. You know, I didn't really know what I was going to do in that office necessarily, but I had this idea that I wanted business. And, I don't know. I don't really know where that came from because I didn't really know anybody. I guess my dad wore a business suit and carried a briefcase and went into Manhattan, but I don't really think that I was fantasizing about his career selling insurance and stuff. That really was not really what I thought about. But when I finally had that job in PR working in the city and I commuted and I was walking up Lexington Avenue, I was miserable.
Yeah.
I hated the commute. Worst of all, the company I worked for, the bosses were just hypocritical and overly demanding of other people without really putting that much on the table themselves. Mm. You know, I found myself ironically babysitting for his 6-year-old daughter while I was working because his wife had a tennis lesson. And then he fired the woman in the cubicle next to me for being absent too many times because her son had strep throat twice during that winter. And I'm like, the irony of this, the hypocritical nature of this, I just can't swallow.
Right.
You know, and they were walking around like they were curing cancer. You know, I'm like, really? I mean, I know your clients pay you a lot of money and you have to do well for them, but we're really only talking about wallpaper, you know? Yeah. Really? That's it.
Oh my goodness.
And I knew that it wasn't bringing meaning to my life, which is where I'm ultimately going with this long, crazy conversation. And I kept after that trying to find jobs that would more align with my creativity or more align with my values or more align with my energy level and what would I wouldn't be bored within 5 minutes or that there was some mobility and interaction. And so for several years, maybe 3 or 4 years, I just kept stopping and starting and stopping and starting and restarting again. And I'd work a job for 6 months or a year and then I'd leave and I'd go find something else in a totally different field.
Yep.
Because I couldn't figure out what was going to be my calling, what was going to light my soul on fire. Yep. And it took me 5-6 years to figure it out. And I'm thrilled that it only took me 5 or 6 years because I know plenty of people who 25 years into a working career still have no idea what they want to do.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I see that. And then those people come to me and we figure it out and then they live their passion, but you're exactly right. Sometimes that takes a long time when we're not proactively on the discovery of that.
It's trial and error, you know, like throwing darts at a wall, you know, at a dartboard.
And we think we have so much time. And in a sense, we do, right? We think about the rest of our life. That might be 40, 50 more years. But that goes by really quick when we're just going through the motions and letting life happen. And then before we know it, we're kind of at this breaking point. This is kind of how midlife crises happen because right. It's like, all of a sudden we've been avoiding and avoiding and avoiding and suppressing or distracting or replacing, that all of a sudden we can't do that anymore. And we have to face the music. We have to face reality. And
right,
that's where the transformation gets to begin.
And I think sometimes it takes a crisis or some, you know, whether it's a physical crisis, a health crisis, an existential crisis, a relationship crisis, a crisis, a global pandemic, you know, something to make us like look ourselves square in the eye in the mirror and say, what the F is going on here?
Exactly. You know,
how do we reconcile this? And where are we going from this? You know, and I think a lot of people are in that stage right now because their careers disappeared with the pandemic.
Exactly. And people are asking themselves the question now, maybe when they have it before, what do I want to do now? Where is there a space for me? So I think, you know, as horrific as this whole thing has been, a lot of people have been finding internal levels of freedom and beauty because they're facing things they've never faced before.
I haven't left their house in 6 weeks, so they have no choice but to reconcile with themselves, you know?
Exactly. So what a blessing in the midst of chaos, you know?
Yeah. I work with, you know, as a teacher, I work with a lot of younger, I hate to admit that I'm one of the old folks at this point, but all right, it's fine. We all have our lot in life and, you know, whatever. So there was all these young, energetic, vivacious, gorgeous teachers, and they're all like looking to date and they all want long-term relationships and they want to see themselves on a path.
Yeah.
But they're in a pandemic. Mm-hmm. And so even if they're doing online dating or they get fixed up by somebody, nobody's meeting anyone.
Right.
You know, they're talking on the phone, they're doing FaceTime, they're doing Zoom dates, nobody's meeting anyone. And I was in this conversation with a bunch of them yesterday and they were bemoaning how hard it is. And I'm like, I'm not belittling how hard it is because I know how hard it is on a regular non-pandemic day, but throw the pandemic in there and it's totally insane. But if you turn it on its ear a little bit, it's really a blessing. And they looked at me like, what the hell are you talking about? And I'm like, all right, so imagine you're going out on a date or several dates and you get caught up in the chemistry that you have with the other person and it starts to get physical really fast because of our hormones and lust and all of that stuff, but you haven't gotten to know them enough to really know what kind of person they are, what their character is like, what moves their soul, what their values are. And so you get physically involved before you get intellectually involved, before your souls connect or don't connect, before you ever figure out if there's a match or a mismatch. And now you've got sex involved and everything gets muddy.
Yep.
And you get sucked in. I said, so now you have to completely take the sex off the table.
Yep.
And you have to look the other person in the eye through the computer or a telephone and talk to them. And you have the blessing of time to get to know a person. You know, I think that most of my relationship catastrophes could have been avoided had I not impetuously jumped in too quickly.
Right. Exactly. We get so excited in the moment that we kind of let our emotions overtake reality almost overtake our actual intuition.
Right.
If we were to just pause for a moment and like really feel into ourselves of what is true, oftentimes that goes against what we want in our humanness. So our humanness is, you know, our human will, right, is really freaking strong. So this is, like you said, a beautiful opportunity for people who are dating to kind of flip the mindset and say, oh, wow, what a huge blessing this is. I get to really have the time of getting to know someone's soul and getting to know their mind, getting to know their heart before I get to know their body, right? And to determine, is there an actual connection here beyond just physical chemistry? Because that's the connection that's going to last and have a long-term mutual fulfillment beyond the highs and lows of hormones, right?
Exactly. And there, like I said, so many relationships that I had that wouldn't have been relationships. They would have been 3 or 4 or 5 dates and then, all right, this isn't working, rather than months or years.
Yeah.
You know, like I went out on a first date with a guy a whole long time ago. And all throughout the dinner, I was like, this is not for me. Mm-hmm. I don't like what this guy's saying. He's too much of a mama's boy, you know, whatever it was. Like, that was just not a good fit for me. And then after the dinner, and he was walking me back to my car, and we were trying to figure out if we were going to do something else or we were just going to end the date there. He said a couple of things that, made me open my eye a little bit more. And he hugged me and kissed me in such a way that I was like, I threw away all of that doubt. And I just ran in the other direction with all of the hormonal things that took over. And it was like 6 months later, and we were sitting on the beach in Jamaica, in the Caribbean. And I was like, who the hell is this moron that I am with? Mm-hmm. Like, we don't have anything in common. This has been an absolute waste of both of our times. Like, why didn't I listen to my intuition 6 months ago and say, thank you very much for a lovely evening. I hope you have a lovely life, but it isn't going to include me, you know, and just walk away. I've done that before and it was perfectly fine. Right. I felt like I did both of us a service, and this particular time I did not.
Yeah. That's a great example.
Yeah. It's happened too many times.
And I think everybody can probably relate with that.
Oh my God. Yeah. Does that happen too many times? Yeah. Or you sort of talk yourself into something, you know, you don't trust yourself enough to see the clues and the red flags and act on them, but you ignore them and you think, well, I'm just reading it wrong. Or it was just a bad day, or it was just something. And you just keep, there's the just again, and you just keep going along with it, even though nothing gets better, even though you're never more happy. And exactly. I don't know why we do that to ourselves, you know?
That and the seeing the potential, right? Especially as women, we are so good at seeing potential in people, right?
Right.
And to the point where we keep things going way longer than they should because we see their potential. We don't want to give up on them. We don't want to give up on anyone, right? And it's kind of this martyrdom type of thing that ends up happening. And it's like, I always say, like, it doesn't really matter where their potential is. Who are they now? Where are they meeting you now in this moment? And is it compatible now? Is this the person you want now? Like, this is a huge deal. If not, you are wasting your time and theirs, and you don't get that time back.
No. You don't. And you're giving up, the phrase you use in your website is personal sovereignty. You're giving that up.
Exactly.
By ignoring yourself, by projecting some untrue version of yourself that works with that person's untrue version of their self.
Exactly.
And then everyone's just like involved with strangers ultimately, because no one gets to know anyone else. I was like that in my whole first marriage because I was constantly trying to please him the way I was constantly trying to please my mother, to the point where I was sublimating everything that I really wanted and everything I felt and completely ignoring myself because it was more important for them to be happy and for me to feel like I had helped cause or bring about their happiness, which of course I always failed at because you can't do that for somebody else.
Exactly.
So yeah, I wasn't until my 40s that I sort of figured this shit out.
You know, we have to learn our lessons until we really get it. Like, not just learn it intellectually, but on a heart level. And once we know it in our soul, in our heart, that's when it shifts, right? Then we do better. You know, there's this phrase, like, once you know better, you do better.
Of course.
I don't totally agree with that in the sense of we know better most of the time in our head, but not in our heart, right? When we feel it, when we know in our heart that we are going to be true and self-loyal, that's when the decision-making changes. But until that point, we're going to keep seeing the same patterns repeated over and over and over until you stop, until you can't anymore. And the hurt or the, you know, the sabotage of choosing someone else over yourself gets to be too much to where you stop, you know? Right. And so everyone is on their own path to each their own. But I think the quicker we're able to come back to that place of self-loyalty into our own hearts and say like, but is this really the most self-loyal decision I could make? Am I going to look back and regret this? Until we get to that point of truth where we're really able to be honest with ourselves, then that's the beginning of really having the thriving relationships, the amazing career, the fulfillment, all of that, that we really want.
Yeah. I think too many of us think that being the people pleaser or being the person who puts their need, the other person's needs ahead of our own is ultimately what is going to, our personal sacrifice is ultimately what's going to make a better relationship. At least that's what my mother always taught me.
Yep.
But I shouldn't have listened to her because that was totally the wrong advice. What I have figured out is that it's actually the opposite.
Yeah.
100% the opposite. And that if you have a choice between disappointing someone else or disappointing yourself, always disappoint the other person.
Yes.
Not to be selfish or mean, but you have to be true to yourself and do what you need to do, as long as it's not hurting anyone else or is illegal. Right. You have to be true to yourself. And in there lies mental health, and in there lies personal boundaries, and really instills trust not only in ourselves, but allows the other person to trust us. Because if we're strong with our boundaries and we know what we want and we're clear and transparent about our intentions, then they're safe to be vulnerable with us because they know how we're going to be and what we want.
Exactly. If we don't know what we want, we can't express it. So knowing ourselves, again, like really that level of self-mastery is the epitome, I truly believe, to being, doing, and having what we really desire and what we know
absolutely
we're missing ultimately.
And this is the exact conversation I had with my son a few months ago. He was between relationships and trying to figure out how to navigate his guilt over ending a long-term relationship because he wasn't feeling what she was still feeling and he still cared about her. But I'm like, you know, you ultimately can't be the person who helps her through this because you're the one who's causing it. Mm-hmm. And nor should you feel guilty about it because you're telling her the truth. You're being honest with her. And it would be more of a disservice if you kept it going because you thought it was going to make her happy when ultimately you'd be lying to both of you.
Exactly.
You know, and I don't think I could have had that conversation with him had I not been willing to do the tough, hard, ridiculously challenging work that I have done over the last decade in fixing myself, in healing myself.
Right.
To then be able to help my almost 23-year-old son navigate through this, you know, and he'll be all the better for it because,
sure,
because I passed. I'm continuing to pass those things along. And I don't look a gift horse in the mouth that I have a 23-year-old son who's willing to talk about these things with his mother. You know,
yeah.
Like, I mean, that's a huge gift for me and for him, but you know, I don't look to take that for granted at all.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So how, you know, I know what worked for me to allow me the space to make this process of acquainting myself with myself happen. But what kind of advice could you give listeners to help them begin this journey on their own?
Yeah, this journey of kind of discovering who they even are and what they
are.
Yeah. So first of all, you gotta admit the dissonance, right? Let's just face the truth of where are you maybe not really fulfilled or not happy? Where is it showing up for you? Where is maybe pain showing up for you? It could be in your physical body, could be emotionally, but we have to first identify that there's something there.
Mm-hmm.
Even change it, right? So let's identify where is exactly it showing up. It might be showing up in every domain of your life.
Right.
Maybe it's just showing up in your relationship or maybe just your career, but first figure out what that is. And then determine if this is definitely not what I want, what do I actually want? And this might be a process. This might take you several months even, right?
Should they make lists of things that are important to them and lists of things that are deal breakers that they have to have and, you know, cognitively dive into that?
Yeah. So understand, I always say truths, values, and beliefs. So what are the things that you believe to be true for you? Make a list of those things. This could be literally anything at all. Like what resonates as truth for you? This could also be known as like your mantras, right? The truths that you live by.
Mm-hmm.
And then your values. What are like morally and ethically, what is important to you? What are your values there? And then beliefs. How do you live that out in your life? If you believe those morals and values to be true, how does it show up in your life as a result of that? And I say we need to get clear on these. I say do one of this inventory, like maybe every 6 months. I do it sometimes every week because as we grow and we expand, right? We
realize change could happen more quickly.
Exactly. Who we were even 6 months ago and the values we had then might not be what we believe now because we've grown, we've expanded, we've healed, especially when you're on the healing path. What resonates as truth for you now is not going to be what was true for you 2 years ago or even 6 months ago.
Right.
So kind of allow yourself, whenever you feel dissonance occurring, it's a surefire sign that your truths, values, and beliefs need to be reevaluated because something is shifting internally, which means our external reality needs to shift as well. So there's typically something in our external reality that we can shift to line up with that internal belief. So for example, that might be ending a relationship that you know isn't going to go anywhere. It could be pivoting careers because you know your soul's dying every day if you go into this job again, right?
Right.
Whatever the case might be. And then once you figure out, okay, what you actually want, what you actually want to feel, what you actually want to be doing. And I say both, right? It has to be, you have to incorporate the feeling sense too. Because if you're just focused on what you want to do, you're never going to feel the way you want to feel, right?
Right.
So we have to also understand and identify each day in a perfect day. So this would be like the third thing I would say to do. Write out, visualize your perfect day. If you could be doing anything, what would your ideal scene be? Literally from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed. Take all the woulds and shoulds out. Take any restrictions out. Anything you think is possible or not possible. Just if you could have any day that you wanted, what would you do? And what would you be feeling as you go throughout your day, right? Would you feel freedom? Would you feel expansion? Would you feel fun? Like, you know, incorporate those feelings because it doesn't matter what we're doing. If the things we're doing aren't producing the level of emotion we want to experience, then again, we're just going through the motions. We're not actually becoming happy people in general, right?
Right.
So uncover what that is for you. Visualize that perfect day. So then once you have all those three things done, then we get to bridge the gap from where you are now to where you want to be and determine who do I need to help me bring that into place. Because sometimes we can't do it on our own. Sometimes we can. Sometimes
you need help. Yeah.
I got to make this decision to quit my job and apply for this other job, right? Or whatever the case may be.
And you might need someone to help you write your resume, or you might need
a
contact that to get an interview or something. Yeah.
Totally. And so from there, exactly, all those other pieces. So let's use the example, you do want to quit your job. You have to make the ultimate decision you're going to do that. Then you might need to hire somebody to rewrite your resume. You might need to, you know, shoot out a couple texts to your contact list and see who might be able to help you with someone that they know and a connection that needs to be made. Then you would need to apply for the job, go on interviews, you know, research. So then you know you have the forward steps of momentum, but it starts with one decision. So take that first decision and then kind of reverse engineer. Okay, what all would I need in order to make that happen? And hire the people, relate to the people, connect with the people, whatever you need to do to make that happen, go all in. And slowly but surely, or potentially really quickly, depending on how fast you like to process through life, it will happen for you. It will be inevitable if you take those actions. You just have to get started.
Right. That's how this podcast came about. Exactly that same process. I was for a long time writing two books, teaching and running my art business and trying to figure out like there was a missing component. I was envisioning this, what we're doing right here, but I didn't see the whole picture and I didn't know exactly that this is what it was going to be. But I had this need to talk to and connect with other people about these topics of healing and getting to know oneself and self-compassion and all of that and share it out with the world. Like I knew this is what I wanted to do. And then I had a visiting professor come through the Google Meet in my classroom talking about the art of the podcast. And I was simultaneously taking a publicity class online. And the two things just sort of exploded in my brain at the same time. And I swear to God, there was an audible sound in that realization. And it just like fireworks exploded in my head. And I went, I'm starting a podcast.
I love it.
And immediately I knew the format of the show. Immediately I knew how long the show was going to be. I knew where I was going to get guests. It was like everything, you know, in hindsight, it looks like the path was clear. Of course you got this skill and that piece of equipment and you learned how to do this and this and this for those other reasons, but that all sort of combines together beautifully. Yeah. But as I was going through it, it was just haphazard and weird and messy. And I don't know what the hell I was doing. And I was up nights journaling and meditating, trying to figure out what in the freaking hell I was doing with myself.
Yeah.
How do I make this little vision of what it is that I can sort of see amorphously in the distance? How do I make that clear? And then it just happened.
I love that. And that's the beauty of like surrender and of letting yourself even have the spaciousness to receive the intuitive downloads. Because I think our intuition is always communicating to us, but we're so busy, quote unquote.
We have to get quiet.
On. Exactly.
And listen.
Exactly. So whatever that looks like for you, some people think you literally have to go sit in a dark closet and like just listen to an audible voice, but that's not always the case, right? It's whatever allows you to listen and to be still. Maybe that means you go for a hike in nature alone by yourself.
Right.
Maybe that means you're going to go paint a canvas. Like it doesn't matter, whatever it is for you that helps you.
All of those things are meditative acts, I think.
Exactly. So, you know, whatever it is for you, I know some people are really hesitant towards the word meditation. They're like, I can't meditate. I can't quiet my mind. Right. And I say, that's okay. Maybe that's not the method for you. What is the meditative method for you? What does help you feel grounded and centered and at peace and brings you back to yourself? Whatever that is, do that. And that's
for me. It's painting.
I love that. I love painting as well.
I just sit and as I'm physically trying to figure out, you know, color, shade, line, composition, whatever, or my mind isn't consciously aware that I'm thinking about problem solving those other things, but it just coalesces itself somehow. And it forces me to be quiet and it forces me to be patient and it forces me to slow the hell down. It's fabulous.
I love it. I love it.
Did you paint the painting behind you?
No, I am not that good.
It's lovely. It's a purple rose kind of.
Yes.
Maybe it's a peony. I don't know.
Yes. I just paint for like therapeutics. I am not actually artistic. I do more abstract things.
Okay.
But I say, you know, and that's the key too, especially as a recovering perfectionist, I like to do things that actually are going to like look good. In the beginning, painting even was hard for me because I was so dead set on like, it has to like look right. Or this is a waste.
Oh my God. Yes.
Right? So that's the thing too. That's a huge part of the deconditioning. Again, you're going to see these little aspects of you show up in everything you try to do. So for me, that was even showing up in painting. And so I finally, you know what? I'm not really an artist. So let me just start doing abstract stuff. Let me just start meshing colors together. Let me do shapes. Let me just do whatever my soul needs to do to express. And when I did that and I just took the expectation out of it,
right,
it was amazing how literally therapeutic it was for me because I was moving energy in that moment. I was allowing myself to release in a way that my mind couldn't understand because I was too in my head. I had to get out of my head and just let whatever come out, just come out.
Absolutely. And if you ultimately don't like the composition or you don't like the way it came out, you paint the whole canvas white or black and start over.
Exactly.
There's nothing permanent about it. I mean, that's why I use acrylic because I do know that about myself is that I have enough patience to work for hours and hours and hours and hours on an acrylic composition. I do not have what it takes to wait for oil to dry.
Yeah.
I just don't.
Oh, I hear you.
I just don't. So, you know, some of my paintings I know are not good enough to show anyone else or to sell. And some of them I sell and make prints out of and sell those. And it's fine. Sometimes I find the most therapy out of copying other famous painters' paintings that I like. Obviously not to sell because they're not my original compositions. But if I just need the actual physicality of the painting process without the pressure of being creative and creating something original, I find that copying the master, so to speak, really helps me.
I love that.
Find a painting that I love aesthetically, that makes me happy to look at. And then I just, Romero Brito is the one that I'm sort of fixated on now. He's a modern like pop artist, and he does these outrageously bright, colorful, almost stained glass effect kind of thing.
Ooh.
But it's very pop art, and every shape has stripes or polka dots or lines, or they're solid colors, and everything is bordered with thick black. It's just every single one of his paintings makes me happy.
I love that. That's amazing.
So I've been painting those. I don't know whether he would be thrilled or not, but...
As long as you're thrilled, that's what matters.
That's all that matters. That's all that matters. Well, this was really super awesome. So you have, not only do you have coaching clients and so on, but you have courses too, don't you?
I do. Yeah, I sure do.
You want to tell us about that a little bit, as long as the listeners are still here?
Sure. So I have several different courses. I've actually right now, I'm always adding to them and revamping them. So I have an intuition course that's going to be relaunching actually in the next like 2 weeks. I don't know when this podcast is going to be airing, but it might be out by the time. It's called the Claire Academy, and it helps you understand and uncover what your intuition type is and how you can master it with practical exercises as well as journal prompts and everything else as well to start developing that really unshakable trust in yourself.
That's wonderful.
Thank you. Called Purposefully Whole. And it's all about healing from heartbreak and understanding how to rediscover who you are again and what you really want post-heartbreak.
So many people need that.
Yeah. And I also have a meditation bundle that is a plethora of different guided meditations to kind of help you get out of your head, back into your heart to feel again. And those are ones you can literally purchase anytime. And then I do run some live group coaching programs throughout the year on various topics that open different times. So you can always check out my website for that.
Okay. And the website is danielle-laura.com.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, I wrote it down. That's awesome. Well, this has been fabulous, Danielle. I'm so thrilled that you were here and that we got to talk about all this stuff. Like we said before we started recording, I feel like these sessions are such therapy for me. You know, I just love the connection and the deep, wholehearted conversation. And
yes,
you've been fabulous.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been amazing. I feel like I was just talking to my BFF. This is awesome. I hope the listeners get value out of it too.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. Absolutely. And I will make sure for those of you who are listening, please check the show notes for some of the highlights of our conversation and all the different ways that you can contact Danielle Laura and take part in her live classes or order her online classes, the asynchronous ones you can take anywhere, also to contact her for coaching, et cetera, through Instagram, Facebook, and her website. And I will include her email as well. So thank Amazing. You so much, Danielle. This has been great.
Thank you so much, Marcy. I've loved it.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of Permission to Heal. I hope you found it moving and inspirational. Please remember, you don't need anyone else's permission to trust and follow your heart. You have the power within you. Subscribe to Permission to Heal so you don't miss any new episodes, and please share this with your friends.